tuned into Quick Charge, the high voltage podcast bringing you the top stories in electric vehicles and sustainable energy daily. And it's all powered by Electrek. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Quick Charge. I'm your host, Joe Boris. It's September 24th, 2024. We're going to start today off with some personal Tesla news. Our own Fred Lambert has received his full self-driving version 12.5 software. He's given us his first impressions here, and those can be summed up with the words more natural, but still dangerous. Now, Fred has a great article here that goes way into depth with the history of the 12.5 software update, hardware 3 versus hardware 4, and it's definitely worth reading. But I want to just give you an excerpt of his first impression of the car. Yesterday, I had to drive from Shawinigan to Trois-Rivières, 25 miles and back. It was a good opportunity to test out the system on both surface streets and highways. My first impression is that there are significant improvements in driving comfort with 12.5. It drives way more naturally. The auto speed mode feature helps a lot. It drives at a speed that makes sense for the road rather than sticking to the speed limit plus or minus what you tell it. The new driver monitoring system, which is vision-based rather than sending alerts, asking you to tug on the wheel even though you're holding it, also helps make the system feel more natural. These were the main changes. I didn't see a significant improvement in performance, but the system is at least more enjoyable to use now. Makes the Tesla FSD less like a job and more like a feature, which is a welcome change after more than 2 years of FSD beta and now supervised FSD. The top comment so far on the article is by Pink Duck. Not on FSD supervised, just plain EAP with FSD in the UK. I've had ridiculous slowdowns lately for no reason whatsoever to near stopping speed in national speed limits, 60 mile an hour. Puzzling for all involved, outright dangerous too. System crashing? Can't tell. Fred goes on to write, while I'm impressed and I think it's an important step as full self-driving is now starting to feel like an actual feature rather than just homework for Tesla owners to train a system that Tesla sold to us years ago, I still find it hard to see a path from this to unsupervised self-driving, especially on HW3 cars. Obviously, this was just my first drive, and I need to spend a bit more time with the system for a full review. But I had two disengagements, including a critical one, in about 50 miles. We are still very far from unsupervised. Now, while that's not necessarily a good review, it could have been worse. But one thing that can't really get better is Tesla's Model Y sales, because Tesla Model Y, for the first time ever, has a real shot at becoming the best-selling car in the U.S. While the Model Y became the best-selling car in the world a few years ago, it does not have this honor in Tesla's home market, which is here in the States. It might get it this year. According to registration data from Experian gathered by Wolf Street, the Model Y is just a hair short of catching up to the Toyota RAV4 after the first half of 2024. That is bananas. I've been doing EV journalism since about 2008. The idea that a Tesla Model Y or any electric car would outsell a Ford F-150 or even risk being the number one seller in the US was completely alien and bananas even 10 years ago in 2014. So this is really exciting, personally exciting. And I think if I'm a Ford investor, I want to know why the Ford F-Series is not dominating the sales charts the way it has for the last, I don't know, I got to check my notes, 35 years. That seems mission critical. But hey, we're not a truck site. We're an EV site, and we're excited about the Model Y. Of note, the Model Y is the only all-electric vehicle in the top 10. The question now is whether or not Model Y can outpace the RAV4 through the second half of the year. And there's a real possibility that it can. As we recently reported, Tesla sales are doing okay in China, significantly down in Europe, but the US is expected to make the difference as buyers are being showered with incentives, which should boost Tesla's performance in the US. With strong performances in Q3 and Q4, there is a real chance Model Y could come out on top by the end of the year. However, it's worth noting here that the number one trade-in on Model Y is a Model 3. So Tesla's Model Y is growing in sales, but it's doing so at the expense of the Model 3, which has dropped off the bestseller list. Now, as we have conversations about Tesla, we talk about Tesla Semi, but there's a lot more to the commercial EV market than just semi trucks. And that's where another name from this phase and round of EV startups comes into play, Bollinger. Bollinger obviously made headlines with their B1 and B2 electric pickup truck and SUV. This was before Rivian came out. This was before the Cybertruck. So really exciting to see them finally go into production with their new B4 class 4 cab over medium duty truck, and production on that vehicle has started this week. Robert Bollinger and his team made a gutsy call 2 years ago to pivot to an entirely different market segment, says Bollinger CEO Jim Taylor. The commercial vehicle segment is ready for electrification, and Bollinger Motors has developed a world-class truck that will meet the fleet needs for companies across the country. We're excited to see these vehicles roll off the line, head to dealer lots, and find a home with our customers. And as if to prove how excited they are, we've got Jim Connolly as our guest today. Oh, you know what? I screwed this up already. Gary, you think I've been doing
better,
this?
Better you than me screwing it up, so.
I've been doing this for 10 years. You'd think at some point I'd become a professional. I'm here with Jim Connolly, obviously, from Bollinger Motors. Jim, what is your official title?
Yeah, I'm the Chief Revenue Officer here at Bollinger Motors. So for those of you, you know, that's a big title. What do I do, right? I'm in charge of ringing the cash register for Bollinger Motors. So I'm responsible for sales, service, marketing, setting up the dealer network relationships, any type of ancillary revenue opportunities through telematics, just about anything that, you know, makes the company run from a revenue perspective.
And this is a really exciting time to be at Bollinger Motors, because just this week, you guys have started actually manufacturing trucks. You got the B4, you know, class 4 medium duty vehicle in production, rolling off the assembly line.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in the automotive industry for 26, 27 years. I mean, how many individuals get to say they, you know, they have the first ever vehicle rolling off the assembly line, right? You know, it's been a long time. You look at Ford, that was the Model T, you know, a long time ago. So to be able to get into a company at the beginning and to have the first vehicle rolling off the line and you're a part of being responsible for that, I mean, that's the highlight of a career.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. So, you know, Bollinger originally came on the scene with a very exciting pickup SUV type product. And then they went very quickly from that into this idea of doing a class 3 sort of cabin chassis, like a big pickup or a potentially a van body tow truck. And even that kind of morphed into this larger class 4, class 5 vehicle where you typically saw Mitsubishi Fuso or, you know, Isuzu with their N series. Why does Bollinger think that this is the market to get into, that this is the class of vehicle to get into?
Yeah, I mean, everybody loves the B1, B2. I probably get asked that all the time, right? They're badass SUVs. That's, you know, that's where we got our image. That's where we started from a heritage perspective. You know, that Robert Bollinger started out with those vehicles, you know, and they're built on a class 3 chassis frame. So some of the design, a lot of the design and everything went into our class 4 vehicle. Why we pivoted is usually the question that gets asked. And it's simply just, you know, revenue opportunity, right? So if you look at the segment for class 4, there's a hole in that space when you look at electrification. And so when you're a startup and you're looking to make money and ring that register fast, you look for those opportunities where you can get those gains in fast, the fastest. Also, the Inflation Reduction Act was out there for vehicles, electric vehicles in this space. And if you look at more of a light duty application, then incentive is somewhere around $7,500. But when you get into my vehicle and price point on my vehicle, it's $40,000 off on that vehicle nationally. And then when you look at some of the other state incentives that are out there, California, New Jersey, Massachusetts, a lot of those are coming on board with incentives or have them. And in some cases, you're another $30,000, $40,000 more. So you're up to like $70,000 off on a vehicle. So, you know, it makes sense to try to capitalize on some of those incentives that are out there. And so that's simple. It's just simple economics. Would we, you know, they're not gone away. B1 and B2 is, you know, still, you know, a passion in our heart for that vehicle. And, you know, we're going to bring those back, but we kind of put them on hold right now to take advantage of this space here. You know, when you look at the B1, B2, there's a lot of competition in that space. And there's a lot of entries that came in within the last 5 years. So it just made sense for us to move into an area where we could capitalize on it quickly and then take, funds and so forth to build our toys.
Yeah, 100% makes a ton of sense. In my other life, I work administering rebates, similar commercial vehicle rebates for utility companies. And we've seen utilities, in addition to state, in addition to federal, putting in another 25,000, sometimes 30, 40,000, depending on the market, on these class four, class five vehicles. Kind of a two-part question here. Are you seeing that that's moving the needle and getting these fleet operators to really go, man, these things are going to pencil out. We're ready to go. And then on the second point of that, being kind of a new name up against these other kind of more established OEMs, do you feel like you have an advantage there because of kind of the cool factor of the B1 and B2?
To answer, the question in regards to that, the incentives, I think from a fleet perspective, I think each year that we're in this space, we've seen the fleets understand more about electrification and the need for it. I think it's been slow. I think the commercial sector, though, from a growth perspective, I think hasn't slowed down at all. And if you look at some of the independent research, you'll see that that this market is going to continue. Whereas I think, there's a slowdown on more of a retail conversation. I think some of it is due to just infrastructure education on that site. But commercial is going to build that infrastructure, right? A lot of the commercial is depot driven. And so forth. And so I think with the incentives out there and the understanding that this is here to stay, there is a push in regards to education. So I've been to a couple shows, and usually the classes at the shows that talk about electrification are the ones that are the most packed because fleet managers want to understand it and so forth. And it's a new world for them, right? For years and years, they've purchased ICE engines, right? And if you look at the commercial space, and if you look at fleet, the fleet manager in a company is usually the hero. They're the one that give you your new car, right? And who doesn't want a new vehicle or a new truck, right? So he's always the guy that has the new toys for us. And there's a little apprehension there, I think, early on that, hey, I'm that guy. Everybody's depending on me for their truck. I don't want to make a mistake. And so that learning curve, in some cases, I think for them was a little steep, but I think they've kind of hit the ground running now. And we see a lot of more educated fleets in regards to that. And so I think it's just taking time, but I think each year, the conversations keep growing. Every show we go to, it seems like, more educated people are stopping in the booth.
That's a great answer, Jim. I know we're coming to the end of our time commitment. There's two things I want to touch on before we go. You mentioned building out a dealer network. I think that's critically important because so many fleets across the country are smaller fleets. They're 2 to 10 truck fleets, and they have a great relationship with their existing dealer. They know that they can take a vehicle to their dealer, get it serviced, maintained, repaired, whatever they need. And I think you guys going through not only a dealer network, but a reputable dealer network is huge. Can you talk a little bit about like TEC and some of your other partners throughout the country that are working with you to get these trucks out there?
A lot of startups say we're, going to buy direct, right? And they think that's the solution there. I say that's a disadvantage versus it is an advantage. In my previous life, I worked with dealer networks. I've had relationships with dealers. They know the customers. They're boots on the ground. They already have that established that relationship. They know the end users. They know the upfitters. And you yourself as an OEM, have to hire an army of individuals to go out and knock on doors one by one by one. Whereas, I bring on dealer groups that have 30 locations, 40 locations. I've now just doubled my tripled my sales staff because they're out there, boots on the ground, and they already know the customers and they have the relationship with them. They've dealt with them on ICE vehicles before, and They know how to service the customer, and the customer satisfaction is going to be much more than if me trying to run around servicing vehicles from that perspective. So, I'm a firm believer in the dealer network. And then when I looked for partners, I looked for those dealers that are the best in the business. And the ones that we brought on board, you mentioned Tech, Affinity in California, there's LaFontaine in Michigan, there's Nacarado across southeastern US. And then we have some others in the works that I can't talk about right now. But yeah, the key is to bring on those individuals who are the best in the business.
I agree completely. So, we're starting to see not many, but one crossed my desk the other day. That was a municipal proposal, an RFP, and it had in there that they had a minimum amount of battery electric vehicles for the job. And that's the first time I've ever seen that. I was shocked.
We love that.
We love it too. But if you're looking at this and you're a fleet operator, or you're an engineering firm or a construction firm, and you're saying, man, I got to buy some of these. What you're seeing from some OEMs is that they're 12, 18 months out from delivery. If someone walks into one of your dealers, and I understand, I know you just went into production last week, this is a premature question, and they say, hey, I want three of these things, I need five of these things, how soon can they get them?
Yeah, no, that's a fair question. We have vehicles rolling off the line right now for customers. So I would say, to answer that question, I would say it just all depends, right? We work directly with the customer and their needs. We'll work with forecasting them out if they need them later. I would say, one size doesn't fit all. So if a customer needs, one or two, that's easier than if a customer needs 100, right? And so I would say we would work to build the vehicle when the customer needs it based on, our capabilities. So I don't feel I have an issue right now that I couldn't accommodate vehicles for somebody looking for them to meet their needs.
That's great stuff. Well, once again, Jim Connolly, thank you so much for being on the show. Obviously, Bollinger Motor is one of the most exciting new startups out there, especially in the electrification space. For people listening who want to get in touch with you, who want to find out more about Bollinger, how do they do that?
You can go to the Bollinger website and click on fleet inquiries and fill out the information there, and we'll get right back to you.
That sounds great. I'll put a link to that in the show notes.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
Once again, Jim Connolly from Bollinger, thank you so much for being on the show. As always, if there's someone from the EV space, someone from the automotive industry you want to hear from, let us know about it in the comments. We'll do everything we can to get them on the show. But as we closed out that Bollinger conversation talking about incentives, it's worth noting that you can now score up to $14,000 off the 2024 Hyundai Ioniq 5 with a new lease cash incentive. That means that leases will be available for under $199 a month on Hyundai's excellent Ioniq 5. It's still one of the most affordable electric cars in the US, and more importantly, has a range of more than 300 miles with fast charging in just 18 minutes. Now, we love to end these conversations talking about sustainability, talking about renewable energy, and today is no different. We're talking about a $1 billion solar and battery project that just broke ground in Utah. Renewable developer R Plus Energies has broken ground on one of the largest solar and battery projects in the U.S. in Utah. The Green River Energy Center in Emery County, Utah, is a 400 megawatt solar and 400 megawatt / 1600 megawatt hour battery storage project that will supply power to Western electric utility PacifiCorp under a new power purchase agreement. Elite Solar is supplying the solar panels, and Tesla is providing the battery storage. Sun Construction is the engineering, procurement, and construction partner for the project. Securing more than $1 billion in construction debt financing in July, the Green River project is expected to create about 500 jobs in the Salt Lake City area. Salt Lake City-based R Plus Energies gives the target completion date as 2026. According to the Solar Energy Industry Association, or SEIA, as of Q2 2024, Utah has nearly 3.5 gigawatts of solar installed. It forecasts another 6.1 gigawatts to be installed in the state over the next 5 years, moving it from 13th to 11th in the national ranking. That's all we've got for September 2024. Let us know what you thought about this show in the comments, and be sure to like and subscribe so you don't miss a minute of it.